Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Wayne Slater, a political writer emeritus for the Dallas Morning News, who teaches journalism at the University of Texas at Austin. He's the co-author with James Moore of the New York Times bestseller Bush's Brain, How Karl Rove Made George W. Bush Presidential, which was made into a feature documentary. And Wayne Slater has covered the administrations of Texas Governors Bill Clements, Ann Richards, George W. Bush, Rick Perry, and Greg Abbott. Welcome to Background Briefing, Wayne Slater.
Great to be with you as always.
Well, thank you, Wayne. And there's a bit of schizophrenia going on in Texas in terms of its anti-government attitudes, where I believe a significant amount of the population believe the government is the enemy of the people. Greg Abbott, the governor, when he was the AG, described his typical day as, I go into the office, I sue the federal government, I go home. And his predecessor, Rick Perry, now the Secretary of Energy, he wrote a book called Fed Up, Our Fight to Save America from Washington. And there's apparently a widespread belief, according to a professor at Rice University, that amongst Texans, that the federal government, they pay more money to the federal government in taxes than they get back in services, the opposite of which is true, as is the case with Alabama and Mississippi and other states down there in the Gulf. So how is this translating now in the current situation where you've got Senator Ted Cruz, a great critic of government spending, asking for federal money?
Well, there's this sort of theological aspect of this, sort of the me and thee theology, you know, money for me, but not money for thee, as we approach these matters. The way to understand this, I think, is to understand not only that Texas is a conservative state, it's a Republican state, it is a state that hasn't elected a Democrat statewide office since 1994. It is a state that has grown up with the political talking points of we're rugged individualists, we rely on self-reliance, and all the rest of that claptrap. It is not simply to think that these are false narratives. It is very much a part of the political social narrative of Texas. And so on the one hand, Texans have always realized, certainly since the Great Depression and the New Deal, that you've got crop subsidies and military bases and highways and a role for the federal government. But on the other hand, politically, especially in the last, say, 15, 20, 25 years, the appeal to the idea, as I think I saw a New York Times piece saying, that in Texas there's a perverse sense of exceptionalism and independence. That's exactly it. Larry McMurtry, the novelist, calls Texans symbolic frontiersmen. That's not the reality part of things, where some Texans realize there's a role for government, but it's the mythical part of the Texas identity that we think and we buy into this myth, and in certain circumstances reinforce the myth that we are self-reliant, that even if somebody lives in Minnesota, moves here, it isn't long before they bought a pickup truck and some cowboy boots. So it is this collision or this balance between the symbolism of the myth, which a lot of Texans like as a strong sort of identity, and the recognition, or the schizophrenia, as you said, that in fact in cases like this, where you have natural disasters, we need the government.
Well, it's ancient history that used to be a solidly Democratic state. LBJ, of course, became president, and there was also Mondale's vice president was from Texas. It's a different state totally now from back in the 1970s, but it's even different from George W. Bush, former governor, former president, and his compassionate conservatism. If you look at, for example, Governor Greg Abbott, I'm astounded that when he was attorney general running for governor after the fertilizer plant in West Texas blew up, killing 15 people, and it was placed right next door to a nursing home because there's no zoning. The first thing that happened normally when you have these tragedies like that, there's reform, but the opposite happened under Greg Abbott. They classified what was previously Tier 2 public inventory requiring all corporations in Texas to reveal, particularly if they have hazardous material on site. So that's, I find that extraordinary. And of course, he took a lot of money from the Koch brothers, and Chase Koch and others supported his run. And it seems like his signal has always been, and maybe it's the same with Rick Perry, Texas is a place to do business, and he puts profit over people. And he's also a very outspoken Christian. And I, for the life of me, I don't see what's particularly Christian about his. He's a part of the Republican governors who turned down Medicaid and also have pushed for the DACA rescinding, which happened today.
Well, and you've really talked about two or three different areas, all of which are an expression of this sort of conservative, anti-Washington, anti-government approach. And so you ask yourself, as you did, and as I did, how in the world can, after the explosion in West Texas of a fertilizer plant in which 15 people died, how can you then move within a matter of months and exclude from public view the inventory of all the potential poisonous and toxic chemicals, not only there, but at any chemical plant in Texas? How can you move in that direction and survive politically? And the only way I can explain it, and I'm not sure I completely can, but the way I can explain it is in the nature of familiarity. It comes against a background of resistance to government, resistance to regulation and to taxes, classic conservatism. And in the case of this inventory, what you had was an expression from that's 60 years, 55 years old. You saw in Houston and along the petrochemical corridor of the Gulf Coast, this terrible flooding and questions raised about chemical plants, including, as you talked about in your show a few days ago, the Arkema plant, which began to explode because of the lack of refrigeration around a key chemical. How in the world can people accept that and recognize that without demanding reform? Well, some people do, but other people have grown up in an environment in which that petrochemical corridor means jobs. And so there's been a long tension between the existence of jobs and the recognition that some of these plants need to be regulated, that there's a place for government regulation. And in a place, in some states, it may be that the regulation, the will to regulation is stronger. In Texas, because of this attitude about government and regulation generally, because of the myth of Texas independence and the defiance not only of government but of nature itself, which you really saw expressed here, and the role of the private enterprise in dealing with it, what you have is a perfect stew, or maybe again, I'm probably the better expression is a tension between people who recognize that these chemical plants are needed for jobs, and so they're not going to be the first people to jump on board regulation that their leaders, like Greg Abbott, who's getting lots and millions of dollars from the chemical and oil industry, say would be detrimental to those jobs.
Well, of course, Wayne, it's a bit odd to have jobs at the expense of your life expectancy, because it's also known as Cancer Alley, the Chemical Coast, and 13 Superfund sites are underwater or have been underwater. So God knows what the consequences to human health are going to be. But the other aspect of my question, Wayne, is not just trying to sort of understand the kind of political outlook of the political class down there. And of course, it's a bit odd, the system where the governor apparently is not as important as the lieutenant governor. And I take it your lieutenant governor is even more right-wing than Greg Abbott. He's a former sort of Rush Limbaugh clone. He had a right-wing talk radio show, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely he did, yeah. The key here is, to look and see what's happened to Texas politics. You mentioned earlier that in ancient history in Texas, everybody was a Democrat. Well, in fact, there were always two parties in Texas, the conservative Democrats and the liberal Democrats. Johnson, John Conley, and Others were part of a more conservative wing of the Democratic Party. And ultimately, after the Voting Rights Act and then the emergence of Ronald Reagan by 1980, what you had is a real division, partisan divide, which is very polarized now in Texas, as it is around the country. One of the things that's always happened, whether it was Republican Democrat, whether it was conservative Democrat versus liberal Democrat in the legislature, was an adherence to and a support of business. But the other element, which you allude to, is certainly in recent years the importance of the evangelicals, the TVangelicals, white evangelicals who are supporting increasingly, and I watched this happen in the last 15 years in Texas and a lot of places around the country. They've become so important. 81% of white evangelicals voted for Donald Trump. You look at the evangelicals in Texas, and they vote overwhelmingly Republican. And if you ask yourself, aren't some of the ideas, as you just said, some of the ideas about how to deal with people, how to protect people's health, families, and so forth, seem to run counter to evangelicalism? That evangelical faith, which has become a key, a cornerstone element and influence in Republican politics in Texas, that evangelical faith is largely transactional. I don't mean that in a mean way. I just mean it's transactional. If, in fact, Trump can deliver on a Supreme Court justice, then it's good. If, in fact, some of his personal peccadilloes, some of his personal abuses, some of his personal history and style run counter to their family values, that's not as important so long as the transactions are made on abortion, on judges, on, and most importantly, in a recent debate, whether trans people can use which bathroom. We laugh at this from a distance, some people do, but it's a very important debate among these TVangelicals. They are economic conservatives, but they are social conservatives as well, and they run the Republican Party. And, as you correctly said, the governor himself appeals very strongly to these evangelical, conservative, Republican, white Republicans in Texas. The lieutenant governor, the power, really, in Texas to move legislation is by a power of two, even more ally of this group.
Well, but the other aspect is not so much political, but just as, you know, trying to get an understanding of this kind of cruel streak that is fairly detectable. I mean, a lot of people were outraged with the megachurch evangelist, televangelist Joel Osteen being reluctant to open his doors. But what's happening now in Houston? You have about 180,000 homes that have been badly damaged. Apparently, under Texas law, these renters, most of whom are renters and they don't have insurance and they're absolutely being wiped out, they're still required to pay their rent. And you've got also, I mean, FEMA is stepping up and doing an extraordinary amount of important work there. But, you know, $876 million in cuts for FEMA by the Trump administration mercifully didn't come through yet. And, of course, you've got the Housing Secretary Ben Carson, who has a hostile attitude toward the homeless. And we're talking about homeless here. So what's your sense of Christian compassion? How is it going to manifest itself with this peculiar divide? I'm almost reminded of the sort of intellectual founding father of the American Revolution, Tom Paine's adage that belief in a cruel God makes a cruel man.
Yes, yes. And it's, I hate to be raw about this, but I think part of the attitude of folks, even evangelicals in Texas, might hinge on how successful the renovation effort is, how successful the federal government intervention and the assistance of state, federal, and some independent efforts to get people back on their feet. I have some doubts about how well this will go and how the attitudes of people might change. That this reliance on self-reliance, this belief that God will take care might take a bit of a hit because of the magnitude of this issue. On the other hand, speaking for evangelicals, and I'm not speaking for them, but as they do, the evangelical like Joel Osteen, who didn't open his church for a couple of days until he got bad publicity, while others did, Joel Osteen will do fine. But what actually happened, and what did we see in this community that an evangelical could say, wait a minute, this is the way our faith works, that private individuals, the Cajun Navy, somebody with a bass boat, somebody else with a bass boat, Mattress Mac, that's a guy who runs a chain of furniture stores, opening up his showrooms to these folks. There's a grocery store chain, H-E-B, that is spending millions of dollars. Obviously good publicity for them, but it's a good corporate citizen effort to deal privately. In a weird way, that's part of the Christian, these conservative evangelicals' attitude about what's going on. Government should do less because individuals should do more. Now, part of those individuals are supposed to be the church, which is not what happened with Joel Osteen, but I can tell you that other churches were involved with helping this recovery effort.
Well, what you're describing, Wayne, sounds a bit like, you know, how weddings and funerals bring out the best and the worst in people. Is that, in a sense, what's happening here in terms of Hurricane Harvey?
And it's, I think that's exactly what's happened in this case. In the case of the televangelist, what you saw was, what's he really about? What is his Christian faith really about? It's prosperity gospel, which is really a strain that's different than the kind of Matthew 25 approach of dealing with each other. And what you saw were individuals stepping up and making something happen. But for people like Greg Abbott, for the conservative Republican hierarchy, political hierarchy in the state, they're asking for billions of dollars in federal money. They need government interference. The same federal government that they like to rail against is the thing they're depending on. It'll be interesting to see how successful these efforts are and whether the attitudes of people might soften a bit. As some Christians talk, will your hard heart soften a little bit about the role of government in helping not just you, but in helping the least of these? I think it's early. We simply don't know the answer to that.
Well, Wayne Slater, I thank you very much for joining us, and I appreciate your time.
Great to be with you.
And again, I've been speaking with Wayne Slater, who's the political writer emeritus for the Dallas Morning News, and he teaches journalism at the University of Texas at Austin. He's the co-author with James Moore of the New York Times bestseller Bush's Brain, How Karl Rove Made George W. Bush Presidential. And he has covered every administration of the Texas governors, starting with Governor Bill Clements, Ann Richards, George W. Bush, Rick Perry, and Greg Abbott. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.